You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Hello and welcome to another episode of Geeks at Large. It's our annual one episode of the year, right? Oh wait, no, we did one in February for Black Panther. It's either been a month, a year, or a decade since our last episode. I am your host, Taylor, and I am very happy to bring back a old Geeks at Large staple, Mr. Casey Gerard.
Hi, everybody. Who am I? How did I get here?
How did I get here?
This isn't my house. You're not my wife.
How the days go by.
Hades nostalgia.
What? What are we talking about? we've got a couple of things we want to talk about. But by and large, this is going to be our review of Ready Player One, the new Spielberg film. But before we get into that, how have you been, Casey? What you been up to?
Well, I'm Paul Manafort's lawyer now, so I spend most of my days trying to tell him that the best thing he can do is spend time with his family before he gets the chair.
I was like, oh, this is good. This episode's going to age really well when he gets, like, the firing squad.
No, I've talked them down from firing squad.
Okay, good.
I mean, honestly,
the initial sentence was going to be shooting him into the sun.
And then I was able to work it down to, if he's found guilty, he'll be put right next to a nuclear testing site to see what happens when he gets blown up. And now I've got it down to electric chair. I think that by the end of the month, I can whittle it down to being at the gallows. And by then, he'll probably be guilty and be hung. And God, his eyes are so buggy.
At the very least, you want to at least just get him down to taking part in the gulag that is South Dakota.
No. They need more people to be mixed into the cement for when they redo Mount Rushmore. So oddly enough, at Trump's head, he'll be the Nostrum.
When they build that wall, Casey, they'll never find him in there.
You know, the first time I saw Paul Manafort, I thought, that guy's going to die the same way the mob ices somebody.
Hey, you want some cement slippers, eh? You guys going to sleep with the fishes?
Yeah, it's like an Animal House. You see Paul Manafort walk out on stage. Paul Manafort, found in bottom of lake, cement shoes.
What you really been up to, Casey? I think last I checked, because I was looking at Skype before we recorded, and I think the last time we called each other was July of last year. So it's been a little while.
I've been Paul Manafort's lawyer. Right?
That's true. You did. You have been living in Brooklyn.
Yeah, dude.
Dude,
I had to set the fire at Trump Tower.
Okay.
How was I supposed to know they didn't have sprinklers?
Or stairs, or an elevator. It's for Trump's private elevator.
Yeah, Trump's private elevator, and then there's the escalator. That one escalator is supposed to be for everybody.
Oh my fucking god, Casey.
R.I.P.
Rest in peace. Rest in piss.
Rest in peace, innocent bystander.
Okay. About a week and a half ago when Ready Player One came out, Casey basically just messaged me and it's like, I want to be on that episode. Because we were thinking about doing one. And we've been trying to get Casey back on for what feels like months, but it just kind of never worked out. But
and this one, because I've seen 8 movies this year, this is my least favorite of them, but I think it's the one that merits discussion the most.
Yeah, it's definitely fascinating.
Yeah, because it's... I feel like there... And granted, I haven't seen all of them, but there's not a Steven Spielberg movie I don't think is worth watching from what I've seen. Like, I don't like Crystal Skull, I think it's worth watching. I don't like Always, I think it's worth watching.
Okay. What would be your argument for making Crystal Skull worth watching?
It doesn't work, and it's kind of worth watching to figure out why it doesn't work. Because it has it has a lot of the pieces for why it should work.
Like, from like an analytical standpoint, why it doesn't work.
Yeah, which is
like
this. Yeah. And Always has some really, really interesting scenes. It just doesn't have an interesting overall.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but I did mention this to Casey earlier before we recorded. I did want to bring up something. Speaking of nostalgia, just kind of in recent weeks, kind of a big thing going on the internet is the whole hashtag change the channel movement against One Channel Awesome. If you don't know what Channel Awesome is, I envy you. it is the home of One, the Nostalgia Critic, kind of one of the forefathers of internet movie criticism, quote unquote. Like, you know, like comedy review criticism type deals.
Yeah. Stuff. Like, if he's done nothing else for the internet, Doug Walker has made riff recaps a thing.
Yes.
And that doesn't just, like, stick with, you know, YouTube videos, comedy reviews. You see that in podcasts all the time. Like, stuff like that lended itself to bad movie podcasts, like How Did This Get Made or We Hate Movies, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So, for those who don't know, the whole Change the Channel hashtag that's going around on Twitter is basically kind of a movement from previous producers who were affiliated with Channel Awesome, which, as of now, and has kind of always been like this aggregator site where various producers would post their videos and, you know, Channel Awesome would basically just use them for ad revenue, which is part of one of the issues of why this whole movement has started, because lots and lots of producers over the past, because it's like 10 years now, I think. This is like the 10th anniversary, or was going to be, of Channel Awesome, if I'm not mistaken.
You're
so
correct.
And I think that kind of also helps spur a lot of it. Some of the people that are kind of at the forefront of this whole thing is like Allison Pregler. She was known as Obscurus Lupa. I know her first name's Kaylin, but she went by Mars Girl. Other people like Lewis Lovehog, who is Linkara. Chris Stuckman is also a producer who has recently left. And basically, I just wanted to like make a little aside about the whole thing, because it felt like it's the iron's hot. So let's like take some time to discuss it a little bit, since Casey and I have both been fans of the Nostalgia Critic for a while. I know that was like something we kind of bonded over.
Yeah,
when we were in college.
Yeah, like this isn't a big thing for me now because I haven't gone to the site in years.
Which I haven't either. It's been like 4 years.
Yes. And it wasn't even like, oh, they're doing something wrong. I grew tired of a style of humor, then I moved on.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens all the time. Sooner or later, Taylor's going to go to me and say, I want to do this. And then I'm just going to go, oh, I've grown bored of you. Goodbye. I'm going to lock the door, and then he'll never see me again.
So, wait.
Love you,
like
Taylor.
The ending of The Godfather?
Yeah. Love you, Taylor. For now.
For now. Our relationship is like an abortion, Casey.
Whoa, there,
this podcast is like an abortion. And, like, even then, like I said, I haven't watched Doug Walker's work, really, in the last 4 years or so. But I think what really brought me on is that there's still people that I watch that were affiliated with Channel Awesome. You know, Allison, like I mentioned, Bayless, Brad Jones, Bennett White, who does Anime Abandon, lots of people. And I think what really drew me is that this is stuff that's been going on for, like, the entirety of Channel Awesome's existence. Stuff like poor management, in the case of their anniversary films, which is basically they got all the producers together to film, like, goofy, you know, shoestring budgeted, almost like Be Kind Rewind type deals. Yeah, that cost nothing and aren't particularly good, but still kind of fun when you're a fan of that site.
Yeah, I mean, I think Suburban Nights is objectively pretty good, except for the fact that they were completely unsafe with filming and got people hurt.
Which is one of the big issues they talk about is stuff like the Walkers just kind of being in their own, which is Doug Walker and Rob Walker, who are the big kind of producers behind the Nostalgia Critic. Doug Walker, of course, playing the character of the Nostalgia Critic. And just how, like, on set they were just very close-minded on ideas. They were very in their own worlds and kind of thinking that this isn't just a goofy, fun time with your friends. This is, like, a film we're making, you know. But just how kind of inept they were at making films from not knowing to have food and water for the cast and crew. Filming a movie with one camera, even though in, this is Suburban Nights, where they're, like, the characters split up into two groups. So even though it would totally be obvious that you should be filming those side by side with two different camera crews, they had one camera for most of that filming. And you get stuff to, like, and a lot of it for me is, like, just kind of looking back and just seeing, like, oh, this is, I remember, like, Suburban Nights and To Boldly Flee and all that stuff. And just kind of, like, hearing more and more information about that. And then hearing more information about kind of like how, like, Allison was fired, which is one of the more egregious things, where she was on a Skype call with Doug Walker and a person we haven't mentioned yet who is probably the most guilty of all of this bullshit, Mike Michaud, who is the CEO. And a lot of the complaints, because that's basically what this Change the Channel document, it's a Google document, it's just a list of kind of complaints and grievances. And most of them are directed at Mike Michaud for just being an awful leader, being misogynistic. There's even some implications about, like, homophobia and such. And knowing that certain people within the company are basically predators and just kind of, like, coming down to, like, trusting them on Scout's honor that they won't do anything, which is just awful. And so I just figured we, you know, Casey and I, as people who are familiar with and were fans of the site and the producers there, just, like, bringing it up. But I definitely think you should, if you haven't yet, check out the hashtag change the channel. Follow people like Mars Girl, Obscurus Lupa on Twitter. I know Allison posted a video a few days ago kind of addressing it, and it was very heartfelt. It was very nice and a little bittersweet, too, because it's just like, you know, no one really, none of them who, like, kind of started the whole hashtag thing expected it to get so big. And that's a really fascinating aspect of it. And we can't go without mentioning Channel Awesome's response to all this.
Response with
response, quote unquote. Their quote unquote apology, where they used the line, "We regret you feel that way." Which, when you're being accused of stuff like basically emotional abuse, misogyny, sexism, incidents of sexual assault from various employees who were, you know, eventually fired, but probably way too late to do any kind of, you know, significant change. And you're accused of just being very poorly run as a company and
very
being very unapologetic. What's that?
And being very unprofessional, being
very unprofessional,
arguably dangerous.
Yes. And it should be said, too, like, I know a lot of people would come out and be, like, kind of defend Doug and Rob, but it should be said that Doug Walker and Rob Walker are very complicit in all of this. In the case of Allison's firing, Doug was there and basically was totally didn't say anything to defend Allison in her firing, even though the whole real reason she was fired was she was on a Skype call with Mike Michaud and Doug. She took some time to step away and go film something because, you know, the discussion was getting heated. She didn't answer their calls for 15 minutes. She comes back and she's fired, you know, basically. And it's funny because as a fan of a lot of these people, you start to put the pieces together of like how, like what actually happened between everybody. Cause I remember when Allison was fired and left and then, Phelan left with her and stuff like that. And yeah, it's just kind of this interesting thing because Channel S is such a bizarre little thing in like internet history, you know, just all these creators who are kind of centered around this one style of comedy, kind of centered around this one character and person who at the helm. And I don't know if you'll ever really see anything like that again. And it's such a weird encapsulation of like the internet at that point. Because now a lot of YouTube criticism and video criticism online has just kind of evolved more into video essays. You know, you have formal Channel Awesome alumni like Lindsay Ellis, Kyle Calgren. They're doing, and like you can tell, like since they left, their work has improved so fucking much to the point that they're two of the best YouTube producers I can think of, especially for this type of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, is there anything else you wanted to say?
I mean, it ties back into our main thing with Ready Player One. A lot of it is looking back on things that helped shape you and realizing that assholes were the ones doing the shaping.
Exactly. So yeah, I guess my final thing is like, don't support Channel Awesome as a company. You know, if there are producers that you still follow, go find them. There's not a lot. Like I remember I saw a number somewhere. I think Allison mentioned it in her review, which you can follow her on YouTube. She's at Movie Nights. She does great stuff. One of my favorite things on the internet is her recap of the entire series of Baywatch. Baywatching, it's amazing. Go watch it. But she talked about like, how
they're down to about 13 people or something like that, and there are
and they started with 40. They started with 40 before.
Yeah, like, there are reasons for people to say like one of my favorite things on the internet is a guy called Sci-Fi Debris, and he does science fiction recaps and Star Trek recaps, or especially his bread and butter. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't upload to YouTube because he keeps on getting flagged by them, even though he's no more in the wrong for fair use than anybody else involved, which yeah. It could be argued that they are being very liberal with how they use fair use, but it's still the case. And he doesn't go to YouTube, and he just uses that guy with glasses because you also kind of need, and that, when you have only your own site, you need something else to promote it. That's what he uses it for. Mm-hmm. If he found an alternative, I would say, yeah, go for that. But when you think about the idea of another type of thing like Channel Awesome, where it plugs this group of people and their reviews that are, or their content, which is unified with the same general idea, but still different content creators, or like mm-hmm. this person reviews that, there isn't really another thing like that in existence right now.
Yeah. And you could, I mean, it's pretty safe to say that it doesn't exist anymore even.
Yeah.
I think once you guys saw like the exit of Allison, Phelan, Lindsay Ellis, Cal Calgren, a lot of those people, I mean, you know, Lewis Lovehog, who's Linkara, he did comics, and he was, like, probably the second biggest thing on Channel Awesome, and now he's gone, you know. I hope Sci-Fi Debris finds, you know, a second, like, a new venue. I'm wondering if how much, like, editing he can do to fix it, because I know a lot of people that were on Channel Awesome, and, you know, that you had Blip, which was their a former, you know, video uploading site that was way, way looser when it comes to fair use and using copyrighted material, which is why a lot of these people went there. And you're seeing people, you know, be it like Matthew Buck, who is Film Brain, who's still uploading shit from, God, like almost 10 years ago that he uploaded on Blip because he has to edit it down. He edits down the footage. and all that stuff to avoid any copyright infringement, you know, when he uploads it to YouTube. So I hope he can figure, Sci-Fi Debris can figure it out. I guess in that case, go to Channel Awesome only for Sci-Fi Debris.
Or go to Sci-Fi Debris' website, sci-fi-debris.com/sci-fi-debris.com.
Yes, check out his website, please. If you can, don't go to Channel Awesome, support his website. So as you said, nostalgia as fueled by people we learn are assholes. Ready Player One.
Yeah, like noted bomb threat claimer, TJ Miller.
Oh shit, we're so topical today. Fuck.
I'm glad that he got escorted away in handcuffs from pop culture.
You are hereby banned from popular culture, Mr. Miller.
Like, I know it's supposed to be because he called in a bomb threat on a woman he was feeding with on a train while drunk or something like that. When you get down to it, I think it's for the Emoji Movie.
If you don't know what we're talking about, actor-comedian TJ Miller was basically arrested for phoning in a fictional bomb threat on a New York... It was a subway train?
No, it was, I believe, just a train to Penn Station.
Just like a train to Penn Station, okay.
I believe he was traveling from D.C. to Penn.
Okay.
Like, how would you call in a bomb threat in a subway? There's no reception, buddy.
I don't know. Doesn't New York have, like, subway phones? I don't know, man. It's 2018. Cambridge Analytica could have done it. Just you wait. That was the true secret of Cambridge Analytica. We're trying Cambridge to figure out how to get Facebook into
Cambridge Analytica's entire goal is to sabotage TJ Miller's career.
The conspiracy is real.
Robert Mueller walks out. Well, the entire thing was to take down TJ Miller. We're going to let it slide.
Oh, we took down the wrong greasy redhead. Oops.
What are you saying about me? I'm not that greasy.
You know, our president used to be redheaded, I guess. Now he's, like, a bleach blonde. It's kind of gross.
I don't think rose art makes the colors that you need to describe it.
Well, that's true. It does, like, change on the day.
Yeah, you know, like, someone has pointed out, it's like, you know, he's really not all that orange, except in some photos where he's the orangest person who has ever lived.
Yep. His pork rind complexion, as I called it.
That's what he reminds me of. Pork rind.
Oh, a dying carcass. That's what he's reminding me of. Speaking of obstruction and collusion, Ready Player One. Or Power Rangers RPO. Casey, do you want to lead us into a discussion on Steven Spielberg's adaptation of the Ernie Cline, much maligned, maybe loved,
there's people
novel?
Like, my girlfriend, she's a big fan of this book, and she acknowledges, yeah, there's a lot of things I find problematic with it, but the way she put it is, the reasons she's harsh on it are because she likes it so much, not because it's bad. So there is a base for it. There are people who do like it. I'm not one of them. I got 50 pages in and I couldn't get through.
Right. I've seen some clips, like some snippets from it, and it's just like, ugh, no thank you.
Like, I have my copy right here, which I got in Loot Crate, which is the appropriate way to...
You get it in a fucking cardboard box with a bunch of shirts and pop figurines.
Like, here's an example of why I could not get through it. It begins with a prologue, and he's describing a video he watched. And there's a bit where he says, hold open the giant double doors, and there's a little asterisk there. And at the bottom of the page is a footnote that says, a freeze frame of this scene appears nearly identical to a painting by Jeff Easley that appears on the cover of the Dungeon Master's Guide, a Dungeons & Dragons rulebook published in 1983. Don't you hear that and kind of want to throw the book up on the roof where nerds can't get it?
Yes. Like, after I, like, burn the ashes, I would, like, throw the ashes. I would burn it and then, like, flush the ashes down a toilet.
Yeah, and And Ernest Cline, with the wonderful timing, got this book out just before people start getting a little more critical of this type of nerd culture. The idea of nerdism as rank, as the, oh, you're not truly as big a nerd as me if you don't know the name of the cell block that Princess Leia was housed under in A New Hope.
You're kind of the gatekeeper.
Yeah, the gatekeeper mentality. This came in right before people started looking at it with a lot more scrutiny. And honestly, rightfully so, I want this, there to be more scrutiny. I feel a little bit bad that he had something that was clearly close to his heart and got it in just before people would turn against it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it would help if it was a less shitty book.
it would help if it was good.
And if there was praise I would give Steven Spielberg for this, is he turned a book I could not read into a movie I could watch.
Yeah.
And
we should just say right here, Steven Spielberg is one of the best things about this movie because he makes it tolerable.
Yeah, he provides a little bit of knowledge of what wasn't working with the book. Apparently, as it goes along, it changes a lot, but there's still problems with it. Steven Spielberg directed a movie written by Zach Penn and Ernest Cline, and this is just a little bit of a tinfoil hat theory on my end, but when you look at the credits, it's A&D and Ernest Cline. And fun fact about the WGA crediting system, if you wrote it with somebody, it's not an and, it's an ampersand. So if you see Joel ampersand Ethan Coen, they wrote that together. If it was Joel and Ethan Coen, you know they're not friends anymore. Like, one wrote a draft, and then someone else wrote it, and it used parts of the other one, so both people got the credits.
Okay.
So my tinfoil hat theory is that Ready Player One was at first a screenplay, because it reads like that. Then he couldn't sell the screenplay, he made it into a book. Then when they made the movie, they had his screenplay to work with, and then Zach Penn came in to do a massive rewrite.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. all three people involved are people who are much more interested in emotional structure than logistical and logical structure.
Right.
One person is good at that, and that's Steven Spielberg.
Yes. So, Casey, if you don't mind, could you please do like a brief little summary on what Ready Player One is about?
Ready Player One is about a kid who lives in the dystopian suburbs of Columbus, Ohio. Truly a hellscape.
Yeah, which, fuck you, Ernest Cline. Get out of my state.
Says somebody who left that state.
Hey, economy's hard, man. I'm just saying.
Hey. I would have voted for Trump if I still lived there. But it's about Wade Watts. I keep on saying Wads. Like,
whatever, it doesn't matter.
Like, what's the baseball player from Always Sunny?
Wade Boggs.
Wade Boggs.
Yeah, it's about Wade Boggs. This movie's about him crushing his previous beer-drinking record as he plays video games.
I would watch this. Out that movie.
I know! It'd be better than Ready Player One.
But he's just
Ready Player Boggs.
He's a kid who lives with his Aunt Petunia and Uncle Vernon. He lives with estranged family members after his family died. And he just, his one thing that he likes in life is he likes going to a virtual reality simulation called The Oasis, where he goes around and plays video games all day and has his friends. It's his escape from the crummy real world.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Oasis, the creator won Holly Halliday. I don't remember his first name, so we're going to call him Hallie.
It's like James or something.
I think it might be Jim Halliday. Would you oppose me calling Hal Halliday?
Hal Halliday.
Die Another Day star, Hal Halliday.
Mark Rylance's character, yes.
He died and left, instead of leaving something to his heirs or his companies, as a normal person would do, he decided to have a contest to see who would inherit the Oasis. which essentially makes it be about a nerd's attempt to win the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is an issue I had with the movie, there's lots of them, but at its core, it's why would I want Wade Wads to win the World Wide Web? I'm
because,
so
man.
Impressed I nailed that on my first take.
It's because, man, this is the Black Panther for nerds.
Yeah.
Haven't you heard?
No, it's... And it's kind of what it is. It's...
Don't say that's kind of what it is, Casey. It is not that.
There's an
Black Panther's a great... Black Panther's a great cultural achievement. Ready Player One is not that.
Black Panther's a movie that knows what it wants to be.
Yep.
Ready Player One is also a movie.
And maybe it knows what it wants to be, but it's really bad at doing it.
No, it's sloppy. Like, when you're just thinking about the movie as a movie, without thinking of any of the outside forces or any, like, analytical thinking about it, it's fine. If you want to say that's the only way to think about a movie, you could argue that, and I think that's kind of fair. That's how I think The Force Awakens is good, because when I think about it in terms of broader things or things that bug me, when I'm sitting there watching The Force Awakens, I'm fine. I'm with it the entire way through. Mm-hmm. This is kind of like that. Structurally, emotionally, it's there. It's a little bit sloppy. There's a lot of things that are kind of confusing just because they take one part out of the book, but they don't take out the other, or they keep this thing, but they don't explain it as well as the book does. And I say well with a lot of quotation marks. But it just, it comes off as sloppy. There's a bit about halfway through where Wade wakes up in essentially in hiding, and Artemis, his love interest, says, "Welcome to the Resistance." And they don't explain what the Resistance is. It plays like Steven Spielberg wanted to use a buzzword from Star Wars in combination with something that's a buzzword with current, like, political or cultural climates.
Right.
So, but when you get down to it, that's just, oh, that's sloppy. It doesn't kill the movie or anything like that. There's things that are silly, like, Artemis is afraid of telling Wade who he is in real life, which is fair. If you're on the internet using a pseudonym and you don't want people to know who you are, you don't need to tell them. But it turns out that in the book, it's because she is heavier set and has a very, very big birthmark on her face. In the movie, she's pretty as fuck and has a light skin tone shift on her face.
Oh, no, Casey, she's hideous.
The makeup in Joel Schumacher's Phantom of the Opera is a worse disfigurement than this.
Oh, yeah, but that looks like you spilt, like big ziti onto Gerard Butler's face.
It looks like he got into a bad bar fight and he'll be gone in a couple days. But, like, for reference, I'm not sure if you follow the YouTube critic Jenny Nicholson, but she did a cosplay for Ready Player One for her review of the movie, and her cosplay looks about as disfigured, quote-unquote, as Artemis does.
Right. Well, it's like also that whole gross kind of trope about, oh, Wade's such a good guy because he stays with this girl even though she's gross and ugly and disfigured. And it's like,
there's nothing fucking gross about her.
Yeah, exactly.
I
like, she's fat and she has a birthmark. She doesn't deserve love. But Wade realizes that it's okay and he's the good guy. He's the one that is good, not her.
You know,
and
you know, I wasn't with, because you and Neil both said to me that Olivia Cooke should have been the protagonist of this movie. I wasn't with that at first. The more I think about it, yeah, she fucking should have.
Oh, well, a lot of that stems from the fact that she's more interesting than Wade.
She's more interesting, and there's an emotional weight to why she wants to win the World Wide Web.
Right. Because they don't develop it very well, because they kind of just, like, say it.
It's still there.
Yeah, it's better than Wade's whole, oh, my aunt and his shitty boyfriend died in an explosion.
Yeah, because, like, Wade Watts is very much like a average protagonist. He's an everyman, but he's too much of an everyman.
Yeah, like, to the point that he's very derivative of so many other characters, whether it be, like, fucking Peter Parker, to like the point that he even has an alliterative, you know, name.
Yeah, but there's a reason Peter Parker's the one going out there slinging webs. Only he can go out there and sling webs.
Yes.
There's nothing remarkable about the geekiness of Wade Watts.
But, man, he knows all this shit. He has the high score in Pac-Man, and he can recite the entire screenplay of War Games.
My God, I wanted a jock to punch him the entire movie.
God, he's well, like, I feel like we're at this point where the sides have flipped, and now it's like, oh no, the jocks are misunderstood.
I want Revenge of the Jocks to come out.
Yes, only, and like, and then they're like not rapists, like Revenge of the Nerds. But like, they're the totally about consent, and if and they just, you know, they just walk the girl to the door, and if she doesn't want to kiss or doesn't invite him up, he's fine with it, and he leaves.
Yeah,
you know, and he doesn't dress up as Darth Vader or some fucking garbage. Yeah, fuck Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah. Oh, boy. We're really going to cut off our banner of geeks at large with this, aren't we?
Well, you know, I mean, we're good geeks. We're not gross rapists, I guess. I don't want to.
Or maybe we are. I'm not going to claim I'm good because the guys who claim are good are the ones who tend to be shitty.
Right, but I'm just saying. We like to think we're good. We like to think we're helping. I don't know.
Hey, man, even evil people think they're good. I'm sure Don Jr. thinks he's a good guy.
I'm a hero of my own story, Casey.
I'm sure Don Jr., when he's making his Tinder profile, thinks he's a solid human being.
Did I ever tell you about my idea for... maybe I shouldn't say this on a podcast that no one listens to. I might get out there, this idea of mine. Anyway, I want to take that picture of Donald Trump Jr. on the stump in the forest, and the caption just be like, when she gets everything in the divorce. So, I'm going to do it.
Dude, why are you recording this to me right now? Get it out before you get this out.
No, Casey, that's unprofessional. What are we, Channel Awesome? Fuck off.
So yes, Ready Player One.
Ready Player One.
It's, as a 3-act structure as a Hollywood movie, whatever. When you start thinking about it in the broader scope of things, it starts falling apart. I walked out of it thinking, I'm glad I saw it, but I'm more glad I accidentally paid for Black Panther.
Right.
But as I went along, I'm really glad that I accidentally paid for Black Panther. And I wish this movie wasn't doing not great financially, but it's doing solidly.
It's doing okay. Like, it'll at least break even, but I don't know how much of a profit it'll have.
It's doing really well worldwide. And
right, because China sees everything.
Well, not necessarily, because, like, Star Wars movies don't do well in China. There isn't a formula to making a movie do well in China. Probably because they're, like, individuals with their own interests and stuff like that.
I don't know, Casey. I think if you put a Chinese actor in sequences that are exclusive to Chinese markets for film, I think that's a good formula.
That's the most egregious of the attempts that Disney made with stuff like that, but they've been trying that with Star Wars. I think that's part of the reason why Rogue One had so many Asian actors. Then ones who are very mystical, ones trying to do Kung Fu, they're playing Chinese stereotypes in there, but that's
one of them. Yes, yeah.
Attempting to do something to get people in the theater in China, and it's just not working. It's underperforming compared to stuff like Pacific Rim or fucking porno sometimes,
or the fantastic Transformers series, of course, which is at this point basically being funded by China,
which they've. The one thing that they figured out with it, there's apparently in Transformers 4, 55 product placements for Chinese products.
Oh my fucking God.
Transformers.
Transformers. Fantastic-mers.
You know, I'll say this. Ready Player One's better than Transformers. And I'm pretty sure there's a Transformer in this movie. So
that's a great bar you're setting, Casey.
Isn't there a Transformer in this movie at one point? Isn't Optimus Prime there?
I don't know.
If it's just a better Transformers movie than Transformers.
Well, the only, like, Michael Bay-related thing I remember is that they have the Michael Bay-produced Ninja Turtles show up.
Which I was...
Like, in a shot.
I was fine with that. Like...
Oh, yeah.
And we're kind of dancing around it, but the gimmick of this movie is the people in the Oasis are able to design their avatars, and their avatars can be people from pop culture.
Right.
Or they'll have weapons from pop culture, or they'll have vehicles from pop culture. And that didn't bug me.
Bugged me way less than I was expecting it to.
Yeah,
because it needs to be said how awful the marketing for this movie was, in my opinion. Because all you really needed was, like, a couple of the posters that they came out with, maybe, like, I don't know, three kind of homage-type posters. They came out with, what, like, 20 or some shit?
But the ones that they did, it's just that I was okay with those, but the Photoshop was terrible.
Well, that's a big part of it, is that they're low-grade. They don't look like professional Photoshop work. Especially that Matrix one.
Yeah, like, I was about to say...
Which one isn't a fucking 80s property. It's very weird.
And that's... If there is something that Spielberg brings to it that I like, it's that the perspective isn't just from a guy who's only interested in 80s culture. It's another old white guy talking about the things he liked growing up with, but he grew up in multiple decades. He brought in things from the 80s and he brought in things from the 50s. One of my favorite shots in this movie is just, it's people having a conversation, and if you look carefully, they're in the shadow of one of the Martians from War of the Worlds.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, and I love that. It's like the 1953 War of the Worlds. It is something where I'm not even crazy about that movie, but it's so neat to see something that cool.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Well, and I certainly don't have a lot of problems with, like, the blink and you'll miss it kind of cameo references. Like, oh, look, it's Ryu from Street Fighter in the background. Or
oh, that guy's jumping off of Serenity from Firefly.
Yeah, like that's ones. Definitely a blink and you miss it one, where it's like, oh, is that what that is? And then, Neil, Geeks at Large member Neil, confirmed that, yes, that is the Serenity from Firefly.
Yeah, and I really like that stuff. I like the background stuff. I even like some of the ones that are front and center. Like, I like the way they use King Kong. Yeah. But, or the DeLorean, I had no issue with. I know that's probably the most, besides maybe the Iron Giant, the most egregious example. And the Iron Giant, I only had an issue with when I found out that it was, that the Iron Giant as a story was how Brad Bird was coming to terms with his sister's murder. That's why you're not a gun, you are who you choose to be. Was a big deal for him. And so with that context, that bugs me, but without that, I'm fine with it. It's people celebrating things they like in universe.
Yeah.
It's just, if there is an issue with it, it's just on a broader thing of, in Ernest Cline's world, this is all one culture, and this is the culture that matters. And I feel that it is dismissive and arguably insulting to people who are not part of that culture. Like, I fit the demographic of the kind of person who would like the same stuff Ernest Cline does. I'm a geeky white dude in my 20s living in Brooklyn, New York. And so a lot of these, I'm able to go, oh, I recognize that. I like that. That's cool. What I'm interested in, what my culture is, the things that I invest in emotionally is different from, say, an old woman in Cairo, Egypt. But there will still be crossover. Like, someone in Cairo still will get to see the movies I get to see. They might choose the ones they like less, or I might be able to see something that came out of Egypt. I'll be able to see the pyramids. So if there is a thing that bugs me, I wish it was more of the idea of the one culture as a more encompassing thing. It's not, oh, this is the only thing that matters. This is what matters to this people. But the thing about the Oasis is it could give you access to this. It could set up it could create a bond with somebody from this part of the world you otherwise wouldn't have seen before. Like, if there's a thing I really like about this movie that isn't a reference, it's how it does, how it handles online friendships.
Right.
Yeah, because it's his best friend in the in the Oasis. It's also his best friend in real life. It's just another player named H, who we come to find out is, he thinks is just another guy roughly his age, and it turns out he's played by Lena Waithe. So,
yeah.
And that reveal is very good. It's like, oh, the person on the other end of an avatar, you don't know who they are. And sometimes that can be a very rewarding thing. You meet someone who's not like you, and you can still forge a great friendship. And the movie's not dismissive of online friendships. Like you and I were online friends. We haven't seen each other in 4 years. And if I play my cards right, I can go another 40 more.
Maybe, if you're lucky, kid. But, like, but it's true. Like, we met originally on the longdeadspill.com back in, what, 2010?
2009,
almost 10 years, Casey.
Oh, and it keeps on dragging on forever.
Fuck you.
But it's, but that's part of the appeal of this. That's the thing I like about it, is that he finds out when he does meet his friends in real life, they're not who he expected. One of them is a 10-year-old, and he doesn't miss a beat on it. It's like, no, you are still really cool. You are still my friend. And I wish they developed that a lot more. I wish the movie was a lot more about the bonds between people, even if they've never met in the real world, that still run true. And
yeah, I would definitely say, if I were to, like, kind of sum up all of my problems with this movie, I would say it's the missed potential of it.
Yeah, because it's there's nothing in the movie I think there's too much of. It's just a lot of stuff that I wish there was more of.
Exactly. Like, one, there's a lot of actors in this movie that I wish there was, like, they had more to do. Simon Pegg is one of them, because he almost just, like, bookends the movie.
Yeah.
Spoilers, I guess. I guess we'll just say spoiler warning for shit we've already spoiled, blah, 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 whatever. It's Ready Player One, who cares? But yeah, like, Simon Pegg's one. I know Neil and I had discussed how, like, Mark Rylance was used in the movie, and while, like, he's probably my favorite part of it, because he's still playing, like, a really fun character. It's a fun Mark Rylance performance, and probably has some of the better humor in the movie. It's debatable of if he's in it just enough or if I wanted more of him. But you know, like, the woman who plays H, like, she's really good in it. I think Olivia Cooke is way better than the material. and we talk about, why she should be the main characters, because one, Olivia Cooke is given more to do. She kind of brings it more. Nothing against Ty Sheridan, I just think he's not given anything to do. Because he's a good actor. I wish Ty Sheridan would get that great performance, like, that great role, since, like, now that he's an adult, you know, because a lot of his roles that I know him for was, like, from, like, Mud, and he was really good at that as a child actor. But he really, since he started doing more and more big-budget movies, he hasn't really gotten, like, that role between this and, like, X-Men Apocalypse. But I think there's a lot of missed potential in, one, like, the themes. You know, we could talk about, like, our over-reliance on technology, or kind of having a critical eye against this kind of pseudo-worshipping of our youth, of our childhood.
Yeah, because it is not remotely questioning of geek culture.
Yes. Which is an important point, because I see a lot of people, both in terms of the book and this movie, is like, oh, it's very critical of that. And I saw none of that in the movie. I haven't read the book, admittedly, but in the movie, I recalled no such, like, critical eye on...
It starts being critical in the movie in the last few minutes.
Oh, yeah, and it's totally tacked on and shitty.
It's like, and this should have been the lesson that Wade learns. I can't think of what he learns in this movie. He's just
he learns to fuck over the world's economy by shutting it down for 2 days. Which that is spoilers, I guess, for this movie. But basically, his resolution, because spoilers, the protagonist wins the internet, and he's head of whatever the game company is. I don't remember recall. And so he gets the Easter egg. He fulfills Halliday's challenge and gets the Easter egg, and now he's the head of the company and of Oasis. And his decision is just, we'll just shut it off for 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, so people can be with their families. And it's like, no, you can't do that now. That's literally like if in the real world we shut the internet off for 2 days. You can't do that. It will have horrible ramifications, you idiot.
Also, it kind of contradicts one of the messages of the movie. Because, like, what if you want to talk... Like, we shut down the internet for 2 days. What if I wanted to talk to you on Tuesdays?
Exactly.
It's like, well,
it's like he met his fucking girlfriend. We're getting into, like, specific moments that, like, made me cringe / groan. It was just, like, when he's like, I fell in love. Like, from Oasis. And he even lampshades it by saying, I know this is really groan-inducing or whatever, but I fell in love. And I'm like, fuck you. You've known each other for, like, a week.
Can I give my complaint to that? How is he able to get on everybody's thing? Started a live video, but if one person starts a live video, does everybody in the Oasis get a notification on that? Do they all start watching it? Is this something where they're still working out the mechanics, and then there will be one guy who starts a live video where he's naked, and then suddenly there's an outcry?
Oh no, he sent a dick pic and everyone saw it. No! We saw Parzival's virtual dick.
It's awesome to take, like, Buckaroo Banzai.
Hey, Buckaroo Banzai is my favorite movie. It's like, oh, good for you.
I like that part.
I don't know. Like, it just felt very, like, shallow and disingenuous.
Well, it's there because it's Ernest Cline's favorite movie.
I know.
Because Ernest Cline has actually never seen a movie before 1977.
But he hasn't even fucking seen Buckaroo Banzai.
Thing is, it's not that this movie isn't enjoyable, because it's visually stimulating. It's fun to watch it move. The set pieces can be really exciting, and you're seeing some pretty solidly done action that also happens to be by your favorite iconic characters. So it's not that I didn't enjoy this movie. I think Neil summed it up best, where he said he laughed, he cheered, he did not like it.
And that's an epitaph if I ever heard one.
And I'm kind of in the same boat where I highly enjoyed a movie I desperately wanted to end.
And the thing too is that I do want to give the movie credit because I think the pacing was very good.
The third act goes on a little too long, especially where it's just like, when they're in the back of the van, the doors open, resolution, doors close, doors open again, another guy gives a different kind of resolution, doors
close.
Yeah,
that's fair. I just felt like overall, like, and I think a lot of this is just Spielberg's doing, is that it was paced rather well.
Uh-huh.
It's a 2-hour and 20-minute movie, and it did not feel that long to me.
Like I said, it started to feel its way to me at the end. But overall, it was still very fast moving. And the set pieces were exciting, and visually, especially with the big one that you can clearly tell they went all out on. In the book, they have to recite the entire screenplay to War Games. In the movie, they replaced that with The Shining, which, just throwing this out there, better movie. Better movie than War Games. Mm-hmm. And it looks like The Shining, like, spot fucking on.
Right, I know there are issues, like, about the inclusion of the scene and how some could see it as just kind of another, like, really shallow reference. But to be honest, and I get that not everyone's going to necessarily have the same reaction as me, because I do really love The Shining, And it's really impressive of how they just recreate it.
Yeah, it's not just that it's like, oh, this is the same location. It looks like it came from 1980. Yeah. Like, the lighting was right. The colors were right. It looked like footage from the movie. I was wondering if they were just using footage from there. I was like, I don't recognize the shot. Did you go back to the Stanley Hotel and match it? Or did mm-hmm. you? Or is this all CG? I wasn't sure how they did it. And I found myself going, like, I want to see more. That's what I want to see more. Then they gave me too much.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, because I was hoping that it would just be like, oh, they have to deal with the same things they dealt with in the movie. So you get H and Artemis and all that. They're being chased by a CGI Jack Nicholson from 1980. Which maybe they couldn't get his image. Maybe modern day Jack Nicholson would have gone along with it.
Oh my god. Hey man, you have some tickets to the Lakers game?
Hey, we're gonna go watch Jack and Jill. I play neither of them.
Hey, have you seen The Departed, man? I haven't.
I haven't, but if you have, you see, you know what my dick looks like.
Just kidding, man. It was a stump dick.
Was it?
I don't know. Probably.
I could see Jack Nicholson wanting to flash the audience.
Well, you know, or at least Matt Damon. Haven't we all wanted to flash Matt Damon?
No.
Oh. Anyway.
Oh, fuck Matt Damon.
I'm more a fan of Matt Damon now. What, Jesse Plemons? Jesse Plemons. Yeah, Jesse Plemons. Well, that's the thing. All the Weinstein stuff where Mark Wahlberg, or not Mark Wahlberg. Yeah, fuck Mark Wahlberg, too, whatever.
Yeah, he literally beat someone to near death. Fuck Mark Wahlberg.
Matt Damon has been suspiciously defensive about all the Me Too stuff. So a lot of people are like, I wonder what he's done. And it's like, oh, man, well, I'm just ready, because if Matt Damon goes down, I'll just turn to Jesse Plemons. So, you know, that's all good. He's been in Fargo and Black Mirror. Suck it, Matt Damon.
I could also see Jesse Plemons of having done something, and I'm really hoping that's not the case.
No, Casey, don't say it.
Wait, that's our backup.
He's our backup.
We didn't have a Kevin Spacey backup.
So yeah, not everyone could just be replaced by Christopher Plummer. Just Christopher Plummer. Yeah. Poor 90-year-old Christopher Plummer having to replace all these people.
Come on,
so you go back and fix like Good Will Hunting, but with Christopher Plummer.
Come on, Steven Spielberg, you could have taken out T.J. Miller and put in Christopher Plummer. It's a voice actor.
Oh my god. So yeah, the Shining bit.
It goes on too long and becomes utterly insane. It's no longer they're just you. Know, it's not them dealing with the things in the movie. It's just them dealing with giant monster shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's dumb. I wish it...
It's dumb and I hate it.
I wish it stuck with just in there. Why did you do your own thing, movie? Stick with what's licensed.
Oh, no. The greatest contradiction of reviewing Ready Player One.
The license stuff is the gimmick. It is what 3D is to Avatar. I still think Avatar did 3D well, and I think that this did the license stuff well.
What would you rather watch, Casey? This or Avatar?
Like, Avatar... Like, I think I told you the second time I tried to watch Avatar was when I was on a school field trip. I was on one of those tour buses where they had, like, oh, each one has their own TV. And Avatar was an option on there. And it was either look out the window at upstate New York for 5 hours or Avatar. I chose the window because I could not keep going with Avatar.
Oh.
Yeah, because when you're not looking at it in 3D on a big screen, it's not interesting to look at anymore.
Yep. Can't wait for those sequels in 20 years.
No. Don't worry about it. It's going to come out next year. And to prove it, he's also going to do Avatar 6. Notice that that's his gimmick. The moment you question if the next Avatar movie's going to come out, he says it's coming out 1 year later, and then he adds another one to the movies he's doing. Because like, hey, is Avatar 2 coming out next year? No, it's coming out the year after, and then Avatar 3 the year after that. I'll show you. Hey, James, it's this year now. What happened to Avatar 2? It's coming out next year, and then 3, and then 4. James.
James. I just want to reiterate, too, is that we've talked about Avatar 2 for nearly a decade.
It's going to come, because it's not coming out in 2018. If it doesn't come out in 2019, it's going to be over 10 years since the previous one. It's The Incredibles is going to come out with one first.
Yeah.
I have an entire thing on Avatar that we'll discuss one day to coincide with Avatar 2, if we live that long.
If we live that, I was just going to say. Alrighty. Anything else you want to mention about Ready Player One? I know you asked me the question, what is your favorite thing about the movie that had nothing to do with a reference? Were you talking about like an aspect of the movie or a scene?
Anything about it. Your favorite thing about this that had nothing to do with licensed stuff. It can take place in a licensed world. It could, I'm okay with it, like, taking place in the DeLorean or underneath the Martian from War of the Worlds. But favorite emotional beat that had nothing to do with a reference?
I would say anything with Mark Rylance that, not including, I guess if it does count, like, the scene at the end where it's, like, his childhood bedroom. I don't know if that counts or not, but I would definitely say anything with Mark Rylance, especially the stuff in the beginning, like his, like, eulogy, his, like, will video, his last will and testament.
Where he's getting out of Spock's coffin.
Yes.
But that has something to do with the reference, but that's just the set decoration. There is a story.
Right. To be honest, I forgot that was Spock's coffin, but just, like, him as a character is just really fun. And Mark Rylance definitely doesn't phone it in, even though he's only in the movie for, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes.
Yeah, I also asked that question on Facebook, and I got a lot of answers, and I got a lot of different answers. And that's the thing I was looking for with it. I wanted to see what this movie had, and it did connect with people. I know people who love the shit out of this movie, and I respect their opinions. I just disagree.
Just that I think that they're wrong.
Yes, just that I think they're stupid. But, oh, shit, I said that out loud. Oh,
oh
no.
Shit, this is recorded. Oh, no.
Oh, my God, if someone listens to this, I'll be doomed.
Thank fuck no one does.
But there is stuff here that can connect with people. There is stuff here that people liked. I wonder if it was enough, and it definitely wasn't for me.
Right. And again, that's ties into the whole missed potential of the movie, is that I feel like there is good stuff here.
I wouldn't want to talk about this movie if it was worse or if it was better. It's just right in that middle ground where there is the makings here for a great movie. It just didn't connect.
Right. That's true.
That's it. I'm going home.
Ernest Cline's childhood.
Ernest Cline's childhood. Ain't that interesting to me.
But it's like 30 years, even though it's like, 60 years after. Okay, another thing I want to really talk about, I just remembered, is I kind of hate the world building of this movie, or lack thereof, of the world building.
It's a little complicated, but I didn't hate it.
Well, to me, again, it's that missed potential thing. Like, we're told it's Columbus. We don't really get to see a lot of the world outside of the Oasis. And what we do get to see isn't very established. We don't get much of kind of any, like, overhead shots of just establishing the location of Columbus in, what is it, 2046 or whatever.
Let's just say 2049 and Blade Runner's happening on the other side of the country.
2049. The same universe.
Shared universe.
Shared universe. Oh, everything's shared universe.
Hashtag Ready Blade Runner 1. Blade Runner.
But definitely like something I've been kind of more aware of ever since Lindsay Ellis did a really good Bright review, where she talks about how like poorly set up the world of Bright is in its fantasy elements, is that it's like, oh yeah, let's see how they do world building. And I just feel like Ready Player One, and it's such a, it might come off as kind of nitpicky, I don't know, because it's such an overstuffed movie. There's so much to do in this movie, and it's such a daunting task to really try to tell the story because there's so much baggage. You have the references, you have to establish how Oasis works. Of course, you have the main... This is even before you get into the whole actual story of the fucking book. So.
Yeah, it's sloppy, especially with... The book explores it a little bit better. It clarifies it a little bit, but it's like, okay, is the Oasis currency just the real world currency now? Right. Is...
Do we even get an establishing shot of what the IOI building looks like?
Yeah, it looks like an IOI.
Oh, okay. I don't remember it. Okay.
Anyways, in my head, that's there. I assume it's real. That part bugs me less. That part bugs me less than me wondering, like, wait, so does IOI own it? Does IOI own the Oasis? If so, why are they not just seizing everything?
Yeah, that's definitely a weird story problem, is that it's never established really what IOI is outside of it's a corporation that just runs a bunch of shit.
And they're against net neutrality, pretty much.
And they're against net neutrality. Well, it's like if you took like the organization from RoboCop, the original RoboCop that ran Detroit, but just like did it way worse.
Yeah.
And then they didn't establish actually like their end goal. Like, what is the end goal of IOI? Oh, well, I guess just to have the
just
Oasis.
Sell a lot of ads.
Yeah, just to put like fucking.
Yeah, because there was that shot. It's like, oh, we can put up to 88% of ads on screen before people tune out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So like, and it's a shame because Ben Mendelsohn deserves a lot better in terms of like a villain role, and I would even argue that is Rogue One villain, even though it's kind of like, you know, an archetype type villain.
In Rogue One. It's more interesting than this one.
It's way more interesting than this one, at least on paper. I mean,
this one where I was constantly assuming that he was just the principal from Breakfast Club. Can I bring up a scene that bugs me with him and Wade? And that kind of, it goes back to the idea of gatekeeperism. The way Wade mm-hmm. finds out that he can't be trusted, that he's against him, is that he doesn't get his geek references. And it's like, oh, you have to know these references to be on my side. You're just a faker. Which I think that, I mean, people have been talking for years about the way people treat fake geek girls, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But it's still, I feel like this is just, even though it's not getting into the gender politics of it, it's getting at the same basic idea, which is a little bit toxic, and more than a little bit, a lot toxic, of just saying, oh, this doesn't count. You have to be like this. You have to know this geekdom to be on my side. Like, no, that means nothing. I have friends who are not geeks at all, and I love them dearly. I have friends I know people who are complete nerds or into the exact same shit I do, and I can't stand the concept of being around them. They're utter dumpster fires of human beings.
Casey, I am right here.
Dude, it's just like, I look at you and I just see trash on fire and it smells bad and I just can't take it anymore.
I mean, that's fair. I can tell that you don't like my spring ensemble that I've been wearing, so that's fine, Casey. I'm not mad. Whatever. You do
your
babe.
Your spring ensemble that you got in 2011.
Hey, man.
There's a spring every year, man.
It's been over a year. It's retro now. It's been 7 years.
My retro Thor 1 shirts.
Hey, man. Hey. Shut up. All right.
Ready Player One.
So
I'm glad.
I guess we'll just wrap up stuff. So go ahead and give your final thoughts, Casey, on Ready Player One.
It's whatever. It has been
making the end. Bye, folks.
This is probably the last time I'm going to talk about Ready Player One, and that's part of the reason I wanted to talk about. It's like, I think this is worth discussing, but I think it's worth discussing the once, being very thorough about it, and not bringing it up again. I'm not going to remember this movie in a year, which is a shame, because most Steven Spielberg movies, even if I don't like them, I remember them. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little bit of a shame. It's not like The Last Jedi, where I constantly want to talk about it because it's a great thing. It's the greatest Star Wars movie, and if you don't understand that, you're clearly an idiot, and you should probably get a doctor to look at that. This is just something where it's fine, whatever. There's problems with it. There's things to talk about with it, but I'm not going to remember it in a year.
Yeah. It's a weird movie where it's fascinating but also forgettable, if that makes any sense.
Like, even a couple minutes ago, we were trying to figure out if there was an IOI establishment shot. I already forgot that.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that in a week and a half faded from my memory.
Yep. And hopefully this episode of Geeks at Large doesn't fade from your memory, all three of you listeners out there.
It faded from my memory. Because I was busy trying.
Who are you? What are we doing? How did I get here?
I mean, it just fades from my memory because I spend most of my time trying to get Paul Manafort out of jail.
Shit, fun fact, bringing it back full circle.
Fun fact, Paul Manafort listens to us now.
Cool. I didn't know they had Wi-Fi in prison.
Oh, he listens when I'm talking with him, and that's what I put on in the background. He was really into the Grinch commentary.
Oh my god. Hey, check out the band camp of Geeks at Large commentary. Link in the description.
Yeah. Which, and for every dollar you give us, a dollar goes to helping Paul Manafort get out of jail.
Or go to jail, whatever.
Whatever. I'm not doing that good a job. He's gonna die.
Attorney client, whatever, is dead.
Attorney-client privilege is dead. Long live attorney-client privilege. But, by the way, since it's dead, I do need to tell you, by the way, he has the P-tape.
Nice.
He hit it in a Game Boy emulator.
It's in a hollowed-out book on a bookshelf. Yeah.
Here's how you get it. You play Pokemon Red on a Game Boy emulator, and you catch a Caterpie, and you name it Caterpie-tape, and then you get
Fuck.
Actually,
these are some crazy, like, final thoughts on Ready Player One, Casey.
I'm going to tell you about the Pokemon Nuzlocke I've been playing when we're done.
Okay.
Because I named my Magneton Paul Magnafort.
Okay. So basically, to sum up, Ready Player One, I don't regret seeing it in theaters. I think it kind of needs to be in theaters. I don't see this being, like, resonating as much with home audiences, like, if they rent it.
I would say watch it in theaters, but do what I did and accidentally pay for Black Panther.
Yeah, it's definitely at most a matinee. You know, if you got a lazy Sunday and they're doing, like, a $5 showing, I would go see it. But there's probably better movies you could be seeing, like A Quiet Place or Blockers, apparently.
Yeah, Blockers, which...
Or Black Panther again. Just see Black Panther for the eighth time. That's fine.
It's still in theaters here. Like, is it still in theaters in Atlanta?
I believe so.
Yeah, it's still in... It's not even just in some theaters here. It's in a lot of theaters. It is still going to be playing when Age of Ultron comes... Infinity Wars comes out.
Infinity Ultron, the first Avenger. Okay. Yeah, so, I don't know, Casey, what is your arbitrary number rating for Ready Player One?
5.5 Paul Manafort plea deals.
There you go. I'd probably be about there. I'd probably say 6 out of 10 P tapes. which is still a good time. I think by far the weakest thing about this movie is its script. The characters, while a lot of the performances are good, and I think I give that credit to Spielberg, what they're given to do is pretty limited. Wade Watts isn't a good character. Artemis is a much more interesting character, and the actress gives a much more interesting performance. And that's why I say I would rather be in the alternate universe where Artemis is the main character. I don't regret seeing it because I wanted to see it because I didn't want to be one of those people that's just like, ugh, this sucks. And, like, I wanted to talk about it and see for myself if it was just as awful as those fucking posters made it look to be.
Yeah, it wasn't that awful.
And it isn't. And I was, and again, I think
this one was weird because there was a wide range where it could have landed. It could have landed as, oh, that's an unexpectedly great movie, or that was utter garbage.
And yeah, like an infamous, like, Book of Henry or whatever Jupiter Ascending type deal.
Yeah, but it wasn't, it landed in a meh spot, which is a place it could have gotten. And I could have easily seen it going there. And that's where it landed. I'm glad it didn't end up awful. I kind of wish it ended up great, but I feel like I would have been less interested if it turned out to be great.
Yeah.
But, you know,
with movies like this where the like, lead up to it releasing just makes me so full of dread. Like, I want to be blown away. I want to be proven wrong. And I kind of was in that it wasn't an awful, horrible, toxic thing. There's some of that still in there, but thankfully it sounds like they removed a lot of it from the book.
Yep.
Which is the best thing I can say, is that it's still better than the book. It's not a good movie, necessarily, but it's definitely better than the book. And from what I've read and heard about the book, I would definitely rather watch the movie than read the book.
Mm-hmm. And I could watch this movie. I couldn't read the book. And one more note of praise on it. Later that day, I had to watch The Emoji Movie, which was another movie starring T.J. Miller and used the song.
T.J. Miller double feature!
Yeah, and T.J. Miller gave a vocal performance, and then they played We're Not Gonna Take It. Between the two, easily the better. This is way better than The Emoji Movie.
Well, you heard it from Casey's mouth. Better than The Emoji Movie. That'll be on the home release.
Yeah, you know... Sorry. Which, you know, The Emoji Movie is false advertising because that implies you're watching a movie.
Yeah, because you're having a religious experience. That's what it is. It's not a movie, Casey.
I mean, does an exorcism count as a religious experience?
I would say yes.
Okay, then yeah, I had a religious experience.
Alrighty. Well, thank you again for joining me, Casey. And hopefully it's not another, like, 8-10 months until your next appearance, but,
We'll see, man. After Cohen got raided, fuck, Manafort's really taken out.
Yeah, we'll see what Mueller does.
Don't worry, he's still investigating why Blockers turned out to be a good movie. I bought some time. Cool.
Nice. You're doing your best lawyer duty here.
Your
and
Honor.
Before we go...
Your Honor, my client's pretty cool.
He all right.
Look, I watched The Simpsons episodes with Lionel Hutz in a marathon. The sound wasn't working. I think I got the gist of it.
I guess you could say he's Paul Manna, fortunate to have you as a lawyer.
How do you know Fortunate Son was written about him? That's the entire basis of my defense. Get there. I packed the jury with Creedence fans and made them think Fortunate Son is about Paul Manafort.
Beautiful.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Before we sign off, just want to, as always, remind people that check out our YouTube page, Sweet Weenie, comedy skit channel. Lots of people who have been on Geeks at Large work on Sweet Weenie. We also have our Bandcamp page with all of our movie commentaries, as Casey earlier mentioned, so nonchalantly, that apparently Paul Manafort's a fan of our How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
I mean, I say fan, it's his only access to culture going on right now.
Well, he couldn't have picked a better movie.
Yeah, the only other thing was I watched the Emoji Movie with him, and, well, we had to call him the doctor because he attempted suicide.
Well, you know.
Couldn't have happened to a more deserving guy. It's weird.
Anyway, yeah, Bandcamp, Grinch. Go check it out. Link's in the description. Casey is going to go continue to be the public defender of one Paul Manafort. And I don't know, I'm going to go make a sandwich. And until next time, we will remain at large.
Unless you're Paul Manafort, then the guy, yeah.